The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Chapter 3. The Marxist View of History. Section. The Materialist Conception of History. We have established that Marxism does not view history as something that is governed either by external ideas or by some biologically fixed conception of human nature. Just as life has evolved, so has human history, since evolution is really just change through time. But what governs that change? The writers of history, wrote Marx, have so far paid very little attention to the development of material production, which is the basis of all social life, and therefore of real history. What was important for Marx was not what is made, but how, and by what instruments of labor, that distinguishes different economic epochs. Marx called this view of human history the materialist conception of history. It began with the idea that social change and social progress are determined, first and foremost, by the ways in which human beings come together to produce their means of survival. Men can be distinguished from animals by consciousness, by religion, or anything else you like, wrote Marx and Engels. They themselves begin to distinguish themselves from animals as soon as they begin to produce their means of subsistence. Marx's basic premise was that the way people organize with each other to produce their subsistence was dependent upon the type of productive technology they had, and that the type of productive methods in turn determined the kind of social organization they could have. Quote, in the social production of their existence, men inevitably enter into definite relations which are independent of their will, namely, relations of production appropriate to a given stage in the development of their material forces of production. The totality of these relations of production constitutes the economic structure of society, the real foundation on which arises a legal and political superstructure, and to which correspond definite forms of social consciousness. End quote. Each stage of human development, with its corresponding mode of production, has its own distinct economic laws of motion, which are independent of the wills of those caught up in it. But changes in the way production takes place produced new forms of social relations and corresponding cultural, political, and legal changes. Each mode of production, foraging, horticulture, slavery, feudalism, capitalism, had its own set of social relations, that is, the social arrangements by which people interacted in production and reproduction of their lives. Each had its dominant, exploiting class, and its oppressed, exploited class. The exception is in gather-hunter societies, where there were not class divisions, as we shall see. The transformation from one mode of production to another was not smooth or automatic. On the contrary, the social relations established at each stage of development acted as a block against the development of new relations, restricting the further advancement of society. Each ruling class would at first act to lead society forward, then, as their rule progressed, would act to prevent any changes to the system from which they benefited. They would move from becoming a class that was historically progressive into a class that was historically regressive. By progressive and regressive, Marx simply meant whether a particular mode of production advanced the development of society's productive forces, and therefore humanity's control over its destiny, or retarded it. In each phase of human history, this contradiction between what Marx called the forces of production, i.e. the productive power of society, and the relations of production, i.e. the form of social organization under which production took place, grew to a point at which there would begin an epoch of social revolution, in which these contradictions, manifested in an antagonism between contending classes, would burst forth. Then the clash of ideas, organizations, and classes would determine whether society moved forward or backward. At a certain stage of their development, Marx continued, the material productive forces of society come in conflict with the existing relations of production, or, this merely expresses the same thing in legal terms, with the property relations within the framework of which they have operated hitherto. From forms of development of the productive forces, these relations turn into their fetters. End quote. In short, molecular economic changes produced economic contradictions, which in turn produced social and political conflicts, class struggle, in which the old relations were overthrown and replaced by new ones. The most poetic and succinct description of this process is found in the first section of the Communist Manifesto. Quote, the history of all hitherto existing society is the history of class struggles. Freeman and slave, patrician and plebeian, lord and serf, guildmaster and journeyman, in a word, oppressor and oppressed, stood in constant opposition to one another, carried on an interrupted, now hidden, now open fight, a fight that each time ended either in revolutionary reconstitution of society at large, or in the common ruin of the contending classes. By rejecting the idealist idea that people can achieve whatever they will, Marx didn't embrace determinism, the idea that human beings are slaves to the blind forces of history, or that the revolutionary transformation of society was as inevitable as the sun rising every morning. For Marx, history consisted, in essence, of the changes brought about by human beings in the process of producing their existence. In a now famous passage, Marx argued that people make their own history. But, he added, they do not make it just as they please. They do not make it under circumstances chosen by themselves, but under circumstances directly encountered, given, and transmitted from the past. History is not something that happens, like a meteor shower or a thunderstorm, but is the activity of real people interacting and clashing with each other. But the limits of human activity are always circumscribed by the material constraint placed on them by the way in which they are compelled to obtain their existence at a given level of production. This dictates a certain social division of labor and ways in which people relate to each other. The weight of the old customs and ideas corresponding to that level of development also press on those attempting to challenge the old. So long as humankind does not have complete conscious mastery over production, full freedom is impossible. Humans act with purpose, with will, but their individual intentions interact in such a way as to produce outcomes that are not consciously willed. This contradiction becomes most pronounced in capitalist society, in which individual wills appear powerless over the blind workings of the market. But once humanity has created a means of production that can provide for the needs of humanity, the necessity of a division of society into classes is abolished, and the basis of a society based upon the conscious mastery of production and distribution becomes possible for the first time. A Society Democratically and Conscious Land by the Associated Producers, on the basis of the application of the most sophisticated scientific knowledge, has long been within our grasp. The socialists who followed Marx and Engels tended to read into Marx and Engels' historical materialism, a kind of schematic list of stages that every society must pass through according to its level of economic development. Stalinism took this to the height of absurdity and turned Marxism into its opposite. Instead of being a guide for workers to achieve liberation, it became, in Stalin's hands, an ideological screen that justified his dictatorship over the proletariat. Marx castigated those who caricatured his argument, seeking to metamorphose my historical sketch of the genesis of capitalism in Western Europe into a historico-philosophical theory of general development imposed by fate on all peoples, whatever the historical circumstances in which they are placed. But the materialist understanding of history is not like the law of gravity. We know that anything we drop in a vacuum, where there is no friction or wind resistance, falls at the same rate. Human history's welter of variables cannot be isolated in that way, but can only be observed in their messy totality. Natural events are blind, i.e., they involve no intervention by any conscious will. Human history, on the other hand, involves people or groups of people acting together or in conflict to achieve definite, more or less conscious goals. Yet in spite of, or perhaps because of, those competing wills, history produces results neither intended nor foreseen by its participants. There are, in other words, driving material forces beneath the surface that shape the consciousness of historical actors, and also shape and limit the scope and character of their actions. Material conditions do not predetermine what will happen in history. They merely indicate the constraints on what is possible at any given moment. A certain set of social arrangements give rise to a corresponding set of ideas. But that does not mean that ideas are merely a passive reflection of material relations. Ideas can act back on those relations to change them, provided they are ideas that correspond to what is materially possible at that moment, and that those ideas embrace a sufficient number of people to affect a social change. Engels felt compelled on more than one occasion to clarify to both critics and supporters that his and Marx's materialism was not mechanical or one-sided. Quote, according to the materialist conception of history, the ultimately determining element in history is the production and reproduction of real life. Other than this, neither Marx nor I have ever asserted. Hence, if somebody twists this into saying that the economic element is the only determining one, he transforms that proposition into a meaningless, abstract, senseless phrase. The economic situation is the basis, but the various elements of the superstructure, political forms of the class struggle, and its results, to wit, constitutions established by the victorious class after a successful battle, etc., juridical forms, and even the reflexes of all these actual struggles in the brains of the participants, political, juristic, philosophical theories, religious views, and their further development into systems of dogmas, also exercise their influence upon the course of historical struggles, and in many cases preponderate in determining their form. There is an interaction of all these elements in which, amid all the endless hosts of accidents, that is, of things and events whose inner interconnection is so remote or so impossible of proof that we can regard it as non-existent, as negligible. The economic movement finally asserts itself as necessary. End quote, and end of section.